And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. And we hope your day is going well. It's now time for Green Side Up. And joining us this morning from the K-State Extension offices from the Wildcat District, we have Francis Graves and James Coover. And guys, good morning. How are you doing today?
Hey, good morning.
Great. Good morning.
Well, it's good to have you guys on today. And Francis, we're going to start with you. But before we get started with your subjects today, you do have a couple of events coming up, correct?
Yeah, we sure do. We've got some ongoing events in Girard, which include Fresh Conversations and Stay Strong, Stay Healthy classes. And those are for senior citizens, just health classes. We also have a fun run, 5K, 1 mile walk that I'll be talking about a little bit later, March 26th in Chanute. We have some free cooking classes going on in March at the Pittsburgh Salvation Army. We have a child care training coming up on April 19th that's going to be virtual in the evening. An Aging with Attitude Regional Expo, April 29th in Fort Scott. Powerful Tools for Caregivers series, which is going to be May the 3rd through June the 7th in Parsons. And then a grant writing workshop coming up in June. And all of those details are on our website at wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu.
All right, so that is coming up. And let's go ahead and get started with your subject for today. And, of course, with it being March, that means that's the start of Walk Kansas. And we have a new event for this year, do we not?
Yep, that's correct. So Walk Kansas is a program that we do every year from March the 27th through May the 21st. You can sign up in teams of six or as an individual. And it's just kind of an encouraging atmosphere and group to try to get yourself moving and thinking healthy for the new year. You'll get emails with some ideas for recipes and tips, as well as some social networking groups that you can be a part of to keep that motivation running. A kickoff event that's new this year is going to be on Saturday, March the 26th at 9 a.m. in Chanute at Neosho County Community College on their beautiful campus. We're going to be having a 5K, a 3K, and a 1K, just a fun run or walk, even if you'd like. And that's going to be $25 for adults to register. That includes an event entry, a t-shirt for the walk, and then a registration into Walk Kansas. So you'll be a member of Walk Kansas after that and just kind of get a sense for what that program's like.
And this is a collaboration with the Wildcat District and the Southwind District, correct?
That's correct. Yep. So it's open to anyone, but we wanted to kind of have a regional Southeast Kansas event bringing people together. So it's actually called the Wild Wind Walk Run. So we're combining Southwind and Wildcat.
Because the other way would have been what, South Cat,
and yeah,
wouldn't have sounded as cool as Wild Wind, you know. So so that's a fun event that is coming up again. It starts it's on March 26th at 9 a.m. Do you have to register in advance, or can you register the day of the event, or
you can definitely register the day of, but you won't get a t-shirt. So okay. If you register in advance, you can register at bit.ly/wildcatpay with a capital W, or you can go onto our website wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu and find the information. And if you sign up soon in the next week or two, then you'll get a t-shirt guaranteed on race day.
Right, and plus getting registered for Walk Kansas on top of that, correct?
Correct.
If you do it online as opposed to do it in person.
Yep, for sure. Yep, you'll also be we'll do your registration for Walk Kansas, so you're welcome to sign up for the run in a group or just as an individual, and then we'll put you through into the system after you register for the event.
All right, so that is a fun event coming up again. That's going to be at Neosho County Community College up in Chanute. So again, that's coming up on Saturday, March 26th, so about just a little over 2 weeks from now. And the next program you're wanting to talk about is the 4-H internship program.
Yes, so this is hot off the presses. We were just approved to have four interns sponsored by a grant that the Kansas 4-H program received from the Kansas Department of Commerce. And this is a statewide grant to place interns all over the state to do direct education programming to try to help our kids who have maybe a deficit from COVID. They lost a lot of learning hours during mm-hmm. COVID. So the Department of Commerce is funding these interns all over the state. We're going to have one at our office in Altamont, one in Independence, one in Fredonia, and one in Girard. In addition to our district, there's also going to be an intern opportunity in Cherokee County. So people are encouraged to apply. You need to be 18 years old, but it's a good internship job. It's $17 an hour, up to 40 hours a week.
That's pretty good for an internship, because usually internships are unpaid for most part. $17 an hour for 40 hours a week, that's not bad at all.
No, it's a good deal. No benefits because it's a temporary employee, but it's a great opportunity for teachers who are off for the summer, just anyone who likes to do education and likes working with kids, because these interns are going to be primarily responsible for conducting youth programs open to any kid of any age, just planning some things, working with the schools and the community partners. So in addition to, I wanted to let people know about applying for these interns, I also want anyone in the community who could use some extra help educating youth this summer to also feel free to reach out to us, and we will connect that organization, that library program, whatever it is, with our interns to try to get some programs into their organization.
When will that internship be taking place?
Sure, the intern needs to apply by May the 1st, and they're going to be working from May the 23rd through August the 12th. There is a little flexibility there. So if someone has a summer vacation or something, we can hash all that out during the interviews. But it's a full 12-week internship at 40 hours a week.
Yeah, and not bad pay there. So for the summer, to fill in for the summer, kind of fills in those gaps there. So if somebody was wanting to apply for that, how can they do that?
So if they're interested in an internship in anywhere other than our four counties, they can go to www.ksre.ksu.edu/jobs. That's going to list every job at K-State, including all of these statewide 4-H internships. And of course, our internships will be listed at wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu on our website.
All right. It's so some great programs going on there. And maybe somebody, maybe the teacher is wanting to do that. What can they be looking forward to? I mean, like what will they be teaching the kids during that summertime, during that internship?
So that's a great question. The great thing about Extension is there's a lot of opportunities, and with 4-H you can explore a number of different areas. So we have some programming and curriculum training that we can provide in areas like STEM or Ag, but they're also free to look into their own ideas. So maybe something that they've used before that's successful, or there'll be some training in Manhattan where they can share ideas with each other to get a plan made. Some of the events that we already kind of have planned that we're hoping our interns will help with will be cooking camps in each of our counties, sewing camps, as well as some farmers market outreach, some activities for kids that are visiting those.
Absolutely. And like you said, STEM, that's always a big thing as well. It's a growing field, and ag is a growing field as well. So again, those are probably not the most important, but those are two huge ones right there.
That's correct. And this grant comes with some program funds too. So there's a curriculum, for instance, called Junk Drawer Robotics, where the intern can learn how to conduct that program, where kids can make a robot from things they might find in a junk drawer at home. And there'll be a little bit of money to where we can purchase some of those supplies, bring kids together, and have them have a really low cost experience learning how to do that STEM activity.
Absolutely. And it triggers creativity as well, on how to do something with what you have, and like you said, a junk drawer or something like that. So
yep.
It's good for STEM, but it's good for creativity as well, to get the brain working.
Correct. The 4-H program is all about finding your spark, finding something that you like, that gets you excited about learning, and maybe continuing that on into a career. So these interns are going to learn the 4-H model for instruction, and then expose our kids in the whole Southeast area and the whole state to some of these new topics that might give them some, not just additional learning, but some ideas for what they might want to do later on in life.
All right. Well, again, that's a great program. So we got Walk Kansas coming up here later on in March, and then the 4-H internship program coming up here in May. And Francis, if anybody has any questions about these two programs, or maybe anything else they would like to ask about, how can they get a hold of you?
They can reach me at Francis Graves, FrancesGraves at ksu.edu, by email anytime. You can call me at 785-331-5378 or visit our website, social media pages, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu.
All right. Well, Francis, I appreciate you coming on today. We'll also hear about those programs here again in a little bit. But thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, James, we're going to bring it over to you here before we go to break, and just want to preview what you will be talking about today.
So I'm going to be talking about cotton, actually. Recently, I went to a conference and learned a lot about cotton. It's something we don't have around here, but it's a really interesting crop. It's completely different from everything else we grow. First off, we don't eat cotton.
Right.
Like we do everything else. But like, and so it grows very peculiarly, and there's really no reason why we can't grow cotton around here. So I just kind of wanted to talk about cotton and all the aspects to it.
All right, and that's going to be coming up on the other side of our break here. We got Fox News coming up at the top of the hour, along with some local news from Matt Jordan. So let's go ahead and take that break. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning, and welcome back to Francis Graves and James Coover. And before we get back to you, James, to start talking about cotton again, Francis, you do have a few programs that are coming up here pretty soon, correct?
We do, correct. We've got some ongoing senior conversations about food in Girard and some exercise classes in Girard. We've also got a 5K, 1 mile fun run to kick off Walk Kansas on March 26th at 9 a.m. in Chanute. We have a child care training coming up on April 19th. The Aging with Attitude Regional Expo, which draws people from all over Southeast Kansas, is April 29th in Fort Scott. And then we have a really great series for caregivers, people who are taking care of other people, from May the 3rd through June the 7th in Parsons.
All right. So, again, some great events coming up here in the Wildcat District, and also the Walk Kansas happening on March 26th. Well, the event up there in Chanute. All right. Well, we're going to go over to James Coover. And, James, good morning. How are you doing today?
Yeah, doing good. Good morning.
Well, it's good to see you today. And today you're going to be talking about cotton, but it's not something we see much around here. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So we hardly really see any cotton around here. However, we could. I mean, there's really no reason why we couldn't grow cotton around here. And so, you know, I think pretty much the only reason why we don't grow cotton around here is because there's nowhere to take it. There's no gins around here, and so we can't grow cotton. It's a big fluffy crop, and so it takes a lot to haul it from place to place. So you kind of have to have a gin nearby. So, you know, cotton in Kansas, though, farther west is not uncommon. There's actually around 320,000 bales of cotton grown in Kansas. At least there was, you know, in 2020. However, you know, the cotton production has really been on the rise in Kansas for some time, probably the last past two decades. About 20 years ago, they opened the first gin here in Kansas, and it's just continued to increase. And so, you know, this is actually, though, way less than a lot of other states. We're about the most north that you can go to grow cotton. And so a lot of southern states that grow more than us. Texas probably grows the most. It's a big state. It's kind of dry there, you know. They got a lot of places for cotton.
And they have the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah. I mean, so logically. Texas has around 6 million bales that they grow. Georgia comes in second at 2 million. And so, you think Georgia, you kind of think cotton. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, those southern states, they do a lot more than we do. So Kansas cotton is grown in south central, southwest. So pretty much Winfield over. That's where the cotton is grown. Some of it is actually grown in irrigated ground. And, you know, there's a reason why they prefer cotton on that irrigated ground, because it actually uses less water than the corn. The nearest gin, like I said, is around Winfield, though. So not terribly close to here. Like I was saying before, we're about as possibly far north as cotton can be grown. So you won't see any cotton in Nebraska. You won't see it, you know, in Iowa or anything like that. So this is really about where it gets.
So that does bring up the question, why can't cotton be grown farther north?
And so the reason actually is because of the genetic ancestry of cotton. And so it's actually a tropical plant that is related to okra. If you ever look at a cotton flower, it looks kind of like an okra flower, actually. It's a great big thing, kind of like a little hibiscus flower, you know, really what it looks like. In tropical locations, that the genetic ancestors of cotton, they grew to like tree size almost. And so they were 20-foot tall, bushy trees that would grow cotton on that. And they were perennial. And so they grew year round. And so, you know, we pretty much took that great big tree and we, you know, selective breeded it into that this little bushy thing that we grow around here, the little annual plant that we grow here. And so, you know, for most, pretty much every other crop was some sort of annual plant that we grow. Cotton was actually a tree. And I think it's, as far as I can think of, it's the only crop we grow in that way that was actually a tree to start off with. So, you know, here cotton has a very long growing season. I mean, we plant cotton as soon as the soil gets warm enough, which is about 65 degrees in May, and it grows literally until it gets so cold that it stops growing. I mean, and so we don't harvest cotton until November, December, because we want that full length. And so most crops, you know, like corn, we'll plant in early April, but we'll be harvesting in September. You know, soybeans, you can get a little bit longer of a season, but cotton, it's literally the entire season. It's the entire summer. And so, and the reason is because it needs that heat unit. Because it's a tropical plant, it needs every little bit of heat units to get it through its entire growth cycle. So we actually might be able to grow cotton easier here in Southeast Kansas because, as every Southeast Kansas person knows, it gets hot here and it's humid, which is more like its tropical ancestry. It feels like the tropics here during the summer. So maybe that's why it can grow a little better. Also, cotton, it can actually deal with the lack of rain a little bit. Not so much it is like a really drought-tolerant plant like, you know, Milo is, but it does because it blooms continuously like soybean does. And so it'll start to bloom and it'll continue to bloom all throughout the rest of the season. And if it gets some rain, you know, those bulls will make some cotton. And if it doesn't get some rain, you know, it'll struggle a little bit, but you'll always get some sort of yield. So it does better with more moisture, but it can deal with the drought. And so, like I was saying before, with the irrigation in western Kansas, they use about a half to a third less irrigation water with cotton than they do with their corn. And so, you know, for those in western Kansas that are under the irrigation pivots that are trying to conserve their water because, you know, the Okanagan and all that and running out of water, they can save quite a bit by going with cotton instead. And so, you know, it is a little more, it's a more drought tolerant than a lot of our other ones like our corn or soybeans. So,
all right. So if it takes the whole summer to grow the cotton, though, is it harder to grow than other crops?
It can be harder, actually. And so it can be harder for a couple of reasons, really. And so one, it's planted on 30-inch rows, which was very common in ag back in the day. But for the most part, we do our corn and soybeans on narrow rows now. And so there's a lot of gap in between the cotton plants. So 30 inches is pretty far. It also grows really slow until it gets to the hot days of summer. You know, when we're starting to sweat, it actually grows better because it likes it. And this is because, you know, it's tropical in nature, but like weeds can be an issue because our native weeds, they don't mind or whatever the weeds that we have around here, they don't mind our coolness of our springs. And so they can really take off. And so we'll have an issue where we have wide gaps. It starts off slow. And so therefore the weeds have plenty of time to germinate between the rows and get going. So weeds can be an issue. However, there's a lot more genetics than there used to be in controlling weeds. And so we have pretty much all the genetics that we kind of have for soybeans where they resist certain herbicides. We have a lot of those, the same ones in cotton too. So it does have a number of pest problems, disease problems, but really no more than any other crop. I mean, they all get pests. They all get diseases. There's actually like the cotton has a boll earworm. And so the boll is a little cotton poof, you know, that's the boll. The earworm is the exact same thing as the earworm on corn. It's the exact same thing as the pod worm on soybeans. It's all the same worm. We just call it a different worm depending on what crop it's on, actually. So it's a universal worm that we call different names. So it gets that, and, you know, there's some other diseases, some borers and other things. But, yeah, as far as that's concerned, not much different than anything else. However, the harvesting is different, and that's kind of one of the bigger issues, because it's specialized equipment. And, you know, specialized equipment means financial investment of some kind. And this specialized equipment's really expensive. I mean, it's a whole different combine. So if you imagine, you know, the combines we have now, it brings in the grain, it thrashes it, throws it in a bin. Well, these combines, they are basically a half combine, half baler, because it packs it into that bale, you know, and leaves it on the edge of that field. And so they're really expensive. I mean, $500,000 or more. Wow. These balers are strippers, just like a combine is, but it's specialized. And so there's two types, a stripper or a picker. And so most of the time, farmers will actually share these machines, or a co-op will have them because of the equipment expense. And so the big bales then are loaded onto a truck, and they'll carry you to the gin. Of course, they're big fluffy things. I mean, have you ever seen one of these giant bales before? Like the cotton bales?
Right.
Yeah, they're huge. They're like 8 feet long and, I don't know, 6 feet tall. I'm not really sure, but like they're actually not very heavy. It's cotton, so it's light and fluffy,
right.
But like they're great big bales. So basically, harvest takes a lot longer. The growing season takes a lot longer. Specialized equipment. So cotton is not cheap to get into, but there's actually some money in cotton. So,
and that's what I was about to say. How profitable is cotton?
So it can at times be pretty profitable. There have been times in the past where grain commodities have really fallen off, and actually cotton was probably the most profitable crop we had in Kansas. So, you know, but like other crops, the markets go up and down. It doesn't quite follow the market boards like everything else does, and it's not sold almost in the same way. And so the way that we use the Chicago markets and the basis of the local co-ops, it's a little bit different than that. It's sold differently. However, it's not quite open market. Most of it is contracted. And so a gin will have a contract with the farmer, like this is how many bales we're going to at least attempt to make. And there's different ways of organizing that. They still have the same market calls, puts, options that anything else does, but there's some different differences. One difference is actually that cotton has a quality component to it, unlike any other crop. And so, of course, you know, with our corn, wheat, soybeans, all that, there's a protein part of it and a toxin part of it. But with cotton, it's very dependent upon the quality of that cotton. And so it's determined by fiber length, by fiber size, the uniformity of the fiber, the color of the fiber. There's like six or seven different components that all get put into a mathematical calculation to determine the grade of the cotton. And so, and this can have a dramatic impact on the price that the farmer gets for that cotton. And so, and you don't know what that will be until much later on when that gin samples that cotton and tells the farmer, this is what we came up with on your bale. And so it's determined bale by bale, the quality of that cotton. And so it's not like other crops where you kind of know what you're going to get, like once you get the bushels. Mm-hmm. It's months later that you'll actually know how much your cotton is worth.
Wow.
So it's sort of the pricing on it is very different from other things. And so, you know, the cotton fiber, it's kind of odd. You've seen the little poof, the little cotton poofs, mm-hmm. the little bowls.
Right.
Well, inside that cotton poof, there are the seeds, the little cotton seeds. And it's actually the cotton fibers grow out of that seed. And so the seed has like little pores on it almost. And it just, the cotton fibers expand out of that seed. And so maybe in its ancestry, it was like wind blown. I'm not really sure why that ends up that way. But yeah, it's kind of odd in the way that works.
So that's pretty interesting that the cotton grows out of the seed that way.
Yeah, yeah. And so the cotton bowl, the big puff, it grows out of little pores. But the seeds are actually really high in protein. And so it's almost an oil crop, which is more like soybeans. It's kind of odd that it does this. It's not a nitrogen fixating plant, which is what we would normally contribute to high protein, but it is. And so it's around 23% protein, which is, you know, more than corn. It's less than soybeans, but it's more than a lot of the other things. And it's actually high in plant oil as well as an oil crop. And so it's about 20% oil, which is almost the same as soybeans. And so cotton oil, can be used almost like vegetable oil, like soybean oil or, you know, canola oil. It's an oil crop. We use it in cosmetics and lotions, and you actually can use it in cooking. And so if you look at some specialty food stores, you'll see a little bottle of cotton oil. That's probably kind of expensive, but because it's specialized. But, you know, you can actually eat cotton oil just the same as you can with anything else. So it's a little different. The seeds, however, we normally use it for around here. It goes into livestock feed. It's a high protein source, high energy. So we grind it up with all the other stuff that comes out of the cotton production. And, you know, it's really good livestock feed, too. Actually, when you're talking about the money to be made in cotton ginning, a lot of the time the cotton will sort of make the farming break even. But it's actually the seeds that will be a big part of the profit. So the seeds are actually a pretty important part of the profitability, at least around in this area. And so, you know, the reason why I'm talking about cotton today, though, hey, it's interesting. It's completely different than everything else we grow around here. And it's kind of cool that it's a tropical tree that we turned into this. It would be really cool if we had a cotton gin around here. I have no idea why pretty much in the entire forest state area, if you look at a map where cotton is grown, there's a big hole where the forest state area is. I mean, you know, here, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, all those states grow cotton, but not in this area. I have no idea why. There's no physiological reason that I can think of that cotton would not grow well around here.
Yeah, the soil would support it, would it not?
Yeah. And in fact, our seasons kind of match up with cotton growth more than a lot of places that do grow cotton. So I can't think of a reason, and, you know, and we used to grow cotton around here. So I know it's possible. So really, you know, mostly I'm wondering how many farmers are interested in growing cotton. And so if there are farmers interested in growing cotton, let me know. Because if this is something that more farmers are interested in, well, it's kind of a cart before the horse. We have to have farmers interested, and then company might be interested in actually building a gin here. And that's really the piece to it, is having a gin locally that farmers can take their cotton to.
Yeah, because the closest one is, what, 2 hours away in Winfield.
Yeah, so that's, in Winfield. Yeah. And it's hard to ship cotton.
Yeah.
It's great big fluffy bales.
Starts flying out, you know, while you're shipping it, you know.
Yeah, so it's not easy to ship that stuff. And most of those gins, I mean, they're already contracted. All the cotton that they're going to mill is already contracted out. And so we kind of have to have our own gin if we're interested in growing cotton in this area. And so, you know, I think there could be some great spots around here that we could grow some cotton. So
absolutely. And you're talking about if, you know, anybody that's wanting to, like, grow cotton, to give you a call. Well, how can they get a hold of you if they would like to talk about that, or maybe something else that has to do with, you know, with cotton?
Yeah. So you can give me a hold of at the draw office. The number there is 620-724-8233, or really just call any of the Wildcat Extension offices.
All right. And Francis, coming back to you here real quick. Again, if anybody has any questions about Walk Kansas or maybe the 4-H the 4-H internship program, how can they get a hold of you on that?
They can email me directly at Francis with an E, francisgraves@ksu.edu, or 785-331-5378.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. I really do appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you. Sounds good.
Thanks.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to start open line. So keep it locked here on the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this pleasant morning in Southeast Kansas.